UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
County dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show. I hope you're all doing okay. And a happy Independence Day to all our American friends for this coming Tuesday. Tonight's guest is David in South Wales with a strange encounter in 2007 in a field in Oxfordshire. And the events that followed sprinkled more high strangeness to the incident. David, up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal, and if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi, mate.
Thank you for joining us today, and you're calling from South Wales.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Just a stone's throw away from me, that is, Dave. Now, Dave, you have an experience to share from 2007. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, sir?
I'll start right at the beginning of this episode, if you like. I was working as a driver for an old American airbase. Basically, that was being used to store cars. And while I was working there, I met a guy called Ricky. And he was a really cool guy, and we hit it off, like, immediately. And then we sort of quite soon discovered that we both had a similar interest in things like UFOs and esoteric subjects and meditation and stuff like that. So neither of us were into drinking and stuff, so we decided that, like, for fun, we would start going out and just doing, like, basically sky watches. So we started quite regularly going to this place called Brill Hill, which in Oxfordshire is like kind of one of the highest points. And we'd go up there and we had like these little fishing bags that sort of doubled up as chairs and stuff. And we'd take flasks with us and stuff. And we'd sit there and sort of like chat and meditate and stuff and sky watch. And most of the time, like, nothing ever really happened. We did see a couple of weird lights occasionally, and it was all just kind of good, relaxing fun, basically. So what happened to us starts one night, basically, where we'd been up Brill Hill, and we'd sat there, and again, like, it was a non-eventful night, but we were there until about 10:45, and then we decided to come home. So we got in the car. I was driving. We're driving back to Bicester, and the road picks up the Aylesbury Road, and then it brings you to a roundabout which the Graven Hill military distribution base is on, which is on the outskirts of Bicester. We picked up the ring road going anti-clockwise round Bicester, and literally as we got onto that dual carriageway, I noticed like immediately as we turned onto that road that there was a massive white light that was, it's hard to judge the distance because I've never seen anything like it before, and there was nothing I could see other than this big white light that was, I think to say, would be about the size of your fist at an arm's length, but shining like a star. It just looked like a star had come down and was huge, you know. So I wound down the window. Ricky is obviously in the passenger seat, and he's like leaning in front of me and getting a look at this thing. We've got the window down and we can hear that there is nothing to be heard. At this point, I've slowed the car right down as well. And it was about 11 o'clock at night. There was no traffic on the road or anything. It was pretty quiet. It was like a Tuesday night. And we're crawling along and we're watching this UFO. And it's basically, it kind of overtakes us, but it's not going very fast. I mean, I'd say that we were probably going about 30 miles an hour, and it was just kind of gently overtaking us. And at the same time, it was losing altitude. It was like dropping down, like I said, like a feather. It would just kind of go along and then all of a sudden like droop down, and then go along and then just like droop down again. And I kind of sensed that it was almost like it was in distress. It was like as if it was coming down, but it shouldn't have been. You know, it was that kind of feeling. I don't know. I can't confirm that, but it's just how it felt to us. So basically, I came up against another roundabout. We went round that roundabout, carried on the dual carriageway. It was still there in the sky, but very low at this point, you know. And we're literally just looking up like above the treetops, and it was just like in eyes line of sight there. And I would say it was, you know, it may have been 500 to 1,000 yards away from us. So we carried on going. We could just like kind of following it, you know, and it keeps going down. And then it goes down behind the tree line, but you can still see it. It's like shining, you know, shining, but you can see it through the trees. And we carried on. We got over the next roundabout, and then it seemed to, I pulled up. As soon as we got past the next roundabout, we stopped the car and we just sat there with the window down, just looking basically. I've gone into a kind of hyper state of awareness. I wouldn't say it was like an Oz factor or anything, but it was just, you've just seen something that you haven't seen before. And, you know, you just kind of like absolutely alert. My mind was absolutely empty, if you like. And I was just watching. And we could sense, even though we couldn't see it directly at that point, but it seemed to have stopped. It wasn't, the light, the shine from it wasn't moving. It seemed to have settled. And I knew that it kind of settled in the fields that were off to our right. So we sat there and we was like, what are we going to do? Because the thing is, we were into UFOs. You know, we were going out sky watching. We were interested in the subject. And all of a sudden it got very real. And it was like a moment of, well, look, if we drive away now, might as well just give up all interest in UFOs, because like, here's a UFO that has come down, and it's like, if you're not brave enough to go and have a look at what's going on, then like, just, you might as well just forget the whole subject. So I sort of looked at Ricky and he said, Dave, look over the road. And right opposite us over the road was one of these little footstiles, you know, like a public footpath sign. And we were like, okay, right, that's, you know, the universe, if you like, is telling us, you know, we are going into that field. So parked the car properly and we got out and we went across the road. We went over the stile, and then when we got over there, it didn't take you immediately into the field. There was a little lane that we kind of walked up for about 50 yards, and then it turned left, and then we went over another stile into the first field. So we got into that field. And it was kind of weird, but there was like a mist on the floor, and we could see then that the UFO, it wasn't in that field. It was in the next field along. And there was another line of trees and a kind of hedgerow. And you could quite clearly see that it was on the other side of that, in that field. You know, you could kind of just about see it directly. But at that point, so we must admit that, like, what happened was that we kind of felt like brave for having done what we'd done, because everyone sort of tells themselves, oh yeah, if aliens landed, I'd go up and say hello and stuff like this. But to be honest with you, there was a kind of air of danger about the whole thing, and I had no idea what awaited us or anything. So I discussed it with Rick, and I sort of said, look, Rick, you know, let's just hang here and have a fag. All right, let's just wait and see what happens. Because I said, if it takes off, I said, that'd be brilliant, wouldn't it? We'll see it take off, and, you know, that would be an amazing story. I said, and if it doesn't, which means it's still going to be there, then it still will be there in 10 minutes time, and we can then go over to the next hedgerow. We get eyes on it properly, and then we can make our minds up about what the next step is. But let's just take it easy, you know what I mean? It's just, you know, I had a wife and kids, and I honestly genuinely felt like, oh, you know, like it was out of our comfort zone, if you like. So we stood there, and we rolled ciggies. That's what we did. You know, we're still roll backy now. So we're like, we rolled ciggies, and we stood there, and we just chatted, and all the time, like, had eyes on the glow that was coming from the next field. And it was really weird, because here we were in this situation where we just, it's everything we'd kind of like talked about and stuff, and it was happening, and we just had this kind of 10-minute interlude where we just kind of enjoyed the moment that we were about to go and see a UFO. We were about to go and see it properly, and who knows what we're going to do. If we can get through that hedge and we can get into the next field, then maybe we were going to go up to it, you know, whatever. We didn't know what was ahead of us, so we kind of like had that last cigarette, if you like, you know. And then, so we put the cigarettes out, and then we said, right, okay. So I said to him, let's walk out to the middle of the field, and then we'll go up to the hedgerow, and we'll have a look, and then that's we'll take it from there. So we started walking, and this is when things got really weird. So we started walking, and I say we were both sober. You know, this was just we were in a normal state of consciousness, nervous and hyper vigilant, but that was it. So we started walking out into the middle of the field. We got no more than like 20 yards out from where we were stood, where all of a sudden, I and Ricky at the same time, but although we didn't really speak to each other, because it happened really quickly, and like we didn't have time, we were both basically, I assume, very wide-eyed and silent. But I saw between 12 and 15 guys coming the other way. Now, they weren't coming straight towards us, because we were still off to the right-hand side of the field a bit. They were walking as if they were walking straight from the hedge and coming out towards the middle of the field. And we, like I say, we were slightly off to the right-hand side of the field, like looking at them. Now, I didn't count them. I didn't have time to do any of that. And at the time, I didn't have a smartphone or anything. I had a £10 phone I could make texts off. That was about it. But I don't think I would have taken a picture anyway. I don't think it just wouldn't have been appropriate or whatever at the time. It was concerned for everyone's safety, basically. Now, these guys, they looked like people wearing hazmat suits. So if you know, like, that kind of, you know, when you've seen the films and stuff, and they've got the kind of clear visor, like with a white hood kind of coming down, and it just like covers the whole body as if, you know, like they're in a, like, you know, hazmat suit, basically. They all had them on. They were walking like shoulder to shoulder, but not in a, like, a uniformed way. Like it looked casual, you know, like there was two of them, and then like three of them, and then one, and then another two. You know, they were kind of like, just as if like friends were walking along the street together or whatever, but they were in a, like a flat line, and they were walking across the field. Now, just watching them, so this all happened very quickly. I think that it would happen at exactly the same time that Ricky put his hand up and pointed at them. I don't think he said anything to me, but he put his hand up and he pointed at them. I think it was almost like an involuntary thing that he was just looking and just pointed a finger at them. Now, at that exact time, one of them turned around and looked at me. Now, when he looked at me, at that moment, his face, I'd say they were probably at least 100 yards away from us in the field. And his face was, it was like he was nose to nose with me. I can't describe it. I don't know how he happened. I don't know. I don't feel like he projected physically over to me, but it was like he turned, he looked at me, and he looked me in the eye, and then he was like nose to nose. And I could see his face really clearly. And he looked human, but not. It was so that I think the visor had a color on it, so that because he had a kind of bluish green tint to his face, but I think it was the whole visor. I don't think it was necessarily, I couldn't say it was skin color because I think the whole visor had that kind of tint to it. And I could see obviously through the visor into his face, and he had eyes and eyebrows and nose and a mouth and like cheekbones, just like a person. But there was something about the way it was all put together that just like didn't quite look human. But if I describe him, I'd have to just, you know, he had eyelashes and pupils and, you know, all the rest of it, exactly like a human being. But there was something about the angles, that just the way the nose was and stuff, that made him look almost a little bit more pixie-like than a human being. But he came across as, I would say they looked about 6 foot tall. They looked the same sort of build as us. And at the same time that he was in my face, I felt dread. And I felt that, like, even though I think it would have been justified to have felt that dread, I felt like he gave me that dread, that he was projecting that fear into me. Like, it just felt external, like, but I couldn't control it. I couldn't do anything about it. I wouldn't consider myself to be an easily scared person. You know, I was in the army and I worked on doors and I was a boxer and stuff, and I'm not generally an easily panicked person, but I couldn't do anything about it. I felt my stomach go, and I wanted to get away from that feeling like nothing else. And he projected a thought in my head. I don't know if I should swear, but it basically, I heard him tell me to F off, and I turned and I ran. And I hate to say it, but I didn't even look for Ricky. I just turned and I ran, and I couldn't stop myself. I had to get away from what he was giving me. I had to get away from it. And I turned and I like just ran as fast as I could back towards the fence. As it happened, Ricky was literally pacing me. He was just off to my right. And I basically got to the fence and I never even looked back. I felt like I was running for my life. That's how it felt. It felt like if I turned around that I was dead. So I carried on running. I went straight over the fence, went straight down the lane. At that point, I think I became aware that Ricky was with me. I could hear him next to me, sort of thing. We still hadn't said anything to each other, but we were both basically running. Went over the next stile into the road, went straight across the road, like just got in the car without saying anything, started the car up and started driving. Now, as a little side note, like, as I started driving away, police car came the other way. And I remember, like, when I got home thinking, God, those coppers, like, they're driving around at, like, you know, 11:30 on a Tuesday night, thinking, there's nothing going on around here tonight. It's boring. I was thinking, if they only knew like what they'd driven past. But they didn't even seem to look at us. You know, like two sort of youngish guys in the car, you know, and I don't think we were speeding or anything, but we, if they'd seen our faces, I'm pretty sure we would have looked like we'd just been through something. And like, but they didn't like even give us any attention. They just drove past and, you know, and they carried on. So basically we carried on driving. When I got to the next roundabout, I sort of started to think about looking over my shoulder, but I couldn't see anything. Couldn't see any light, couldn't see any glow of a light or anything. So basically, drove straight back to my house, had another tea and a fag with Ricky. And we were just in this funny place. Like, we were just like looking at each other, like, you know, did that happen? But it did happen. And there was nothing to be done about it. It was like, it was over. And like, basically then I dropped him home. I went home, went to bed because I had to go to work the next day. So, you know, the next day I saw Ricky at work. Because he was a plater on the cars. So I wouldn't see him all day long, but I'd just see him periodically. And we were just like, you know, that was a bit mad what happened last night. And he was like, yep. he's not a man of many words, Rick. He was just like, yep, that was pretty mad. And you know, we carried on, like, we're still friends now. We unfortunately, he still lives in England, I live in Wales, so we don't get to see each other very often, maybe once or twice a year at best. We still talk about it because we're the only two people in the world that know that it happened. We tried to tell other people about it initially, and what we found was that hardly anyone was interested. Like, people just weren't interested at all. They weren't really paying us any attention. We sort of thought, isn't that the most amazing thing you've ever heard? And people would be like, oh, I don't know. And it was like, we thought, well, they either don't believe us or they just don't understand what we're saying we saw, you know? So anyway, the next few months, I had a couple of like strange things happen, which I would say we never told anybody or that mattered as far as I could see. But it all started when I came back to my house and we just popped out, me and my wife and the kids. We came back and our front door was wide open and thought, okay, we had never done that before, you know, went inside, checked, and there was nothing. Hadn't obviously been broken into, and we lived in a close where we kind of knew all the neighbors pretty well. Everyone kind of oversaw everybody, and there was nothing untoward in that. So the next day we came back and the front door was open again. It was just, and it was wide open. Like, it was just, it happened three times that week. And I genuinely started to sort of think there was something odd about it. So there was, the following week after that happened, I was in the kitchen, which was at the front of the house, and it had a window over the sink, just looking out over the close, like, you know, like I do. And I got up, I had been sat down for a while, and I got up, and as I got up, I realized there was a car parked out the front of my house. And it was quite a nice car. I don't know exactly what it was. It was a newish car. And there was a guy sitting inside the car and he was staring at the house. And I thought, that is a bit odd. So I just stood there and I just watched him and he was just staring. So then he got out the car and I thought, what's this? Because he got out of the car and he looked like military. He looked fit and lean and he looked like he could hurt people. And he just stared. He just stared at me through the window. Casually pulled a camera up and took a photo. Now I was in a place where I was just stood there and I thought, I'm not engaging this guy. I'm not going to go out of the house. There was something menacing about him. And he very slowly, whilst not taking his eyes off me, got back into the car slowly and then just drove away slowly, as if he was saying, I'm not intimidated by you. And, you know, I'm letting you see me. And I didn't have any enemies. I didn't, you know, there was no reason for other reason that that could be the case. And I just thought to myself, what is going on here? And then literally about 3 days later, I'm cooking dinner for my kids and we had a house phone. It was one of those cordless ones. And my wife's mum phoned while my wife wasn't there. And I was literally dishing up dinner. And I put the phone into the crook of my neck, you know, like you do to listen to someone talking when you haven't got your hands free. And I was just like taking the stuff off the hob and that. And all she said was like, you know, oh, is Hayley there? And I said, no, she's not here at the moment. Okay. And she said, okay, no worries. Put the phone down. Now I was holding the phone in the crook of my neck and I didn't have my hands free, like I say. So I didn't turn the phone off. And I heard someone as clear as day on the line say, no, he didn't say anything. And I went, sorry. And as I said that, the phone clicked and then there was no one there. And I was just thinking, what's this about? Because I'm nobody. No one's interested in what happened to me. You know, it was like, would it matter if I went to the papers or anything? It would just be another UFO story from someone with no credentials. I just couldn't see what the issue was, but it carried on happening. I went into the park. At the time, we were fostering dogs, as in we were like a halfway home for dogs that were being rehoused. So dogs would come and live with us for a few months, and we'd look after them while families were coming, and they'd come and visit them, and if it was the right family, then they'd take them away. So I was taking dogs for a walk over in a local park from us, and as I walked into the park, there was a woman in the park and she was, I'd say she was 30, 35, and she was attractive, dark hair, slim with like a jacket on. But she was staring at me. And I immediately, like at this point, I'm already getting a little bit paranoid. You know, I'm walking around a little bit, sort of, you know, I'm noticing things. And I stared back at her. And then she looked away. And of course, because it was a woman, I was really like trying to, obviously I didn't want to intimidate her or anything, but at the same time, I felt like she was staring at me, you know, so I got the dog and I'm throwing a stick for the dog and stuff. And he's running, picking it up and that. And then I look up every now and then, I'm just looking up and she's on her own in this park where most people are walking dogs or got kids, but she's just on her own. And every time I look up, she's looking at me. And then when I look at her, she looks away. But she's not going anywhere. She just like take a few steps off and then stop, you know. And she pulled out these glasses. So she puts on a pair of these sunglasses and she's got her back to me. And she's like staring at the fence, right? And there's like these just fences that are on the back of other people's gardens that surround the park. And I'm thinking, everything about this woman is wrong, right? So the dog came up to me and I put the chain on him and I just started walking towards her. And I thought, I'm just going to walk towards her and just say hi and just see if I can get anything out of this, you know what I mean, that I can't see from where I am. The moment I started walking towards her, she took these glasses off, put them in her coat. She had the side hand bit would go, you know, and she just walked hurriedly out of the park on the opposite entrance. So I carried on walking towards her, and as she walked out of the park, these glasses dropped out of her pocket. So I carried on walking, and I when I got there, I thought, right, okay, I'm not going to follow her out of the park, you know, like I'm not, just in case I'm mistaken and all this kind of thing, you know, and like, you know, she might be being intimidated by me, and I thought, fair enough, I'm not chasing her down or anything. I just wanted to see what was going on with her. So I picked these glasses up. Now, these glasses were a pair of sunglasses, which I later found out you can buy on the internet and stuff. They had no insignia on them, no marks of like, you know, of companies, but they had mirrors inside. So when she had her back to me and she was just staring supposedly at the fence, she was actually watching me. And it looked like when you put them on, it was like having wing mirrors. and you could look and you could see behind you. And I'd never seen anything like it before. But as I say, I found out that apparently there is something that you can buy and people do or whatever for riding bikes sometimes. But so I kept them at the house. Obviously, I just took them home, put them at the house. And I told a few people about it. And then came back to the house. The door was unlocked. It's like, oh, that's just not stopping. Went in and the glasses had gone. But that was the only thing that had gone. The glasses were, they were on the side. You know, there was nobody else that I know would break into my house, you know, and steal glasses or anything. You know, it was like someone came in my house and took those glasses.
I'm Richard Serrett. Join me on Strange Planet for in-depth conversations with the world's top paranormal investigators, alien abductees, Bigfoot trackers, monster hunters, time travelers, and more.
The handler one day told her this whole thing about how they've been terraforming on Mars and they're building a colony and they're recruiting specific people of specific bloodlines and specific talents and skill sets to go onto the planet.
On Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, we're redefining reality. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Right, so I had helicopters that were just sitting over the house with their noses pointed towards the house. I've never had that before. And then I had a funny train ride where I took a train to High Wycombe to see a friend of mine. And for the whole journey, there was a black helicopter. And again, I think at this point, it's hard to know whether I'm being paranoid or what's going on or whether it's being done on purpose, because the surveillance, all I can say was it was completely overt. I mean, no one was hiding what they were doing. It was as if they wanted me to see them. But like, there was a black helicopter that basically, and this was insane, it just paced the carriage that I was sitting in. And I'm sitting off to the right-hand side by the window, and it just sat out of the window. And when we'd stop at a station, it would go up and it would circle. And then when we would carry on going, it would come back down and do it again. And it was one of these old, like, little two-seater helicopters with, like, the bubble shield front. And it had two guys in it wearing all black with the black visors that you see, you know, that come down over the face and make them look like insects. And they basically were just staring at me. I was saying to other people in the carriage, can anyone see this? And they were going, oh, yeah. But they didn't seem that interested again. It was strange, like, it was only me that seemed bothered about it, but they were staring at me for what I could, you know, I know they had black visors on and stuff, but you know, you could feel someone staring at you. They were staring at me and they were so low. They would fly, well, when it was over the fields and stuff, they were just flying almost parallel with the train, like, you know, probably only maybe 200 feet above it in reality. I don't know. And staring at, and I could see them. They were that close. I could just see them, you know, every detail. And they would just stare. And like, yeah, it was bizarre. And then after a couple of months, like I said, there was a number of things that happened, but they're the main things that stick out in my mind. It just died off. And I have to assume that, like, obviously, if this thing happened to us, I assume it happens to a lot of people. I assume that these things happen to a lot of people. And like, maybe it was just that after a couple of months, I wasn't interesting anymore. And someone else was, you know, and something else was going on to somebody else. But like, it just kind of stopped. But it was enough for me to, like, in my own life, to turn around and say, I just wanted to stop. I even like would pick up the phone and like, and just say to the deadline, you know, just say, look, if you want to talk to me, just talk to me, but just stop doing all this stuff. You know, like, whatever you want to know, I'll tell you. I'm not your enemy. I'm not against you or anything. If you want to know something about what I know about it, just ask me. And there's nothing I wouldn't tell you. You know, as far as I'm concerned, we're all on the same side, I assume. But like, it just was weird. It was like an intimidation tactic just to make me feel unstable. And it just kind of died off. And then I just didn't see or hear anything weird ever again. I got on with my life. I maintained an interest in. I've always had an interest in UFOs and paranormal stuff and that, you know, and esoteric stuff, and, you know, just always found that's to me, that's our life is interesting, whatever. But like, I just basically carried on, and that was like 16 years ago. And it's only when I stopped talking to anyone about it. And then it was just, so recently I just started binge listening to your podcast, and I kept listening to people's incredible stories. And of course, then you're saying at the start, you know, look, if anyone wants to say, tell me one of their experiences. And I thought, okay, well, this is how I can contribute to your show, because I, you know, I don't have like spare money as such, but I can tell you something that happened to me, and like, hopefully people will find it interesting, and hopefully maybe something similar has happened to someone else. And like, they're sort of thinking that they shouldn't talk about it. But I think maybe right now, as things are sort of progressing, especially in the UFO field, maybe people should be talking about it and just saying, oh yeah, no, you know, I'm a fairly normal person too. And this happened to me. Yeah, so, yeah, Nick, that's about it, I think, mate, to be fair.
Good stuff, Dave. Good stuff. So this is something that I've mentioned periodically on the show about, I call it kind of like a paranormal bubble. All right, it's where weird things start to happen. The reason why, you know, they stopped interacting with you is simply because you weren't talking about it. And I think the initial few weeks of you having your experience is usually when you'll tell someone, whether it's a family member or start telling friends on the phone, or even possibly a journalist. So it looks like that there was just nothing, I wouldn't say nothing interesting about you, but whatever they think you saw, you weren't talking about it, other than to Ricky.
Well, it's it, you know, and I was really interested as to how they knew, you know, because of the fact that we hadn't really spoken to anyone, you know, I was a bit perplexed about how we'd gone from being in that field that night to then me getting a lot of unwanted attention. So unless you don't know who you're speaking to sometimes when you speak, you don't know, or whether you don't know how, whether because you spoke to a friend on the phone about it, is that enough? You know, like, and then that's it, that somehow that there are, even 16 years ago, like, you know, there are just keywords or something. I don't know. I have no idea. I've looked into all of that stuff, you know, and sort of like gone down the rabbit hole. I actually, what you're saying now as well was one of the reasons why I was a little bit nervous about speaking tonight, because I was thinking, well, yeah, obviously everything went back to normal. I thought, but then I'm going to speak to Nick, you know, and obviously just hoping that no one's threatened by me saying that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was too long ago now.
Yeah, it is a while ago. And yeah, I mean, there's a few things to remember. I mean, I've mentioned on the show before, and actually recently on an unreleased episode, where I was lecturing. I started to get this strange activity that was happening when I was researching this stuff. One of the times I was living in Cheltenham, and I was doing a lecture at one of the libraries. And at those kind of meetings and lectures, you'd always have people that come that are interested, and then you have people which seemed a bit out of place. They'd be quite smartly dressed, you know, polished up shoes, very military type looking individuals, but they didn't seem interested, you know. They just seemed to be there, you know. They wasn't interacting or anything, and when it finished they left, always, you know, never stuck around, which where a lot of people did. They stopped and chatted and stuff, but these guys would always leave. And I had a bike. I didn't have a car at the time. I had a bike, and I was riding back to the other side of Cheltenham, and I was aware, it was quite late at night, and I was aware there was a car following me. And where I was living, it was a cul-de-sac. I enter it via like a small alleyway, and it comes out into this cul-de-sac. So I knew this car was following me. So all I did was I went through the alleyway, and then I circled back to the road and then came out again. When I came out, the car stopped. He stopped on the road, and I pulled up alongside him, and he wound up his window and drove off. So it was those little things. And then a short time later on, I had a load of case files from cases I was working on. There was a couple of abductions in there, a lot of UFO sightings. I had numbers, I had people's addresses, descriptions of all, you know, everything. So it wasn't on the computer, it was all in these physical files. And I'd gone up to Northampton, I think it was. So I was out for a good 10 hours. And when I came back past midnight, I'd been broken into. The window was smashed. all these case files were missing. They were all taken. Nothing in the house was taken other than these files. So I had like a TV and a VHS player. All of that was fine. Nothing was disturbed, only these case files. So it was a lot of things like that. And the phone, yeah, I can totally relate to the phone, the click-ins, the voices on the phone, that all happened. And you tend to go, I wouldn't say mad, because I was aware of what was happening. I was paranoid. I did eventually get, you do get very paranoid. You're constantly looking behind you.
Yeah.
So then you got to say to yourself, well, you know, if I'm being followed, generally the people that do this are very good at what they do. You won't know them. You won't see them. You won't hear them because they're undercover. So then it begs the question is that either they weren't very good at what they did or they wanted you to know, right? So the helicopter being in front of you and being purely visible is because they want you to know that they know. So you can look at it.
It totally felt like.
Yeah, so it's more intimidation than anything else. And it include even in the woman in the field, you know, she could have deliberately dropped the glasses so you would find them, so you'd then know what she was up to.
And see, all the time there was still that plausible denial, because my missus immediately sort of looked online to see if you could get those glasses, and you could. So there was nothing, it wasn't a smoking gun that this was the intelligence services or anything, because it was like anyone could get those glasses. You know, so
I've seen those glasses. Yeah, they're very handy for the paranoid types that want to know who's following them, and or especially, you know, even if you're in some dangerous area, dangerous neighborhood, you know, to be aware of who's behind you. So they're actually quite a good idea. So I know they do exist.
But it was just the way she was, and like, I can think of one more thing now. That like immediately, there was a time when I was looking out the front, and there was a car with four men in it. And that they had a laptop open in the car. I could see the kind of, you know, the kind of glow off the screen or whatever. And they were sitting there and they were staring at the house. So I phoned my mate who lived over the road. And I said, can you see these guys outside the house, you know? And he said, oh, yeah. He goes, oh, mate, he said, what's going on with them? And I said, I don't know. I said, but they look, because they all look kind of clean cut, you know, and they didn't look like gangsters or whatever. They looked like, you know, like they worked in an office or something, but they were staring at the house and they had a laptop on. And I said to him, I said, okay, I'm going to go out and see these guys. I need to go out and see what this is about. And he said, I'm looking out the window. He said, just go out and see them. As soon as I did that, they started the car and they drove off. And it was like, the timing was just, I was like, you're listening to my phone calls. Yeah, at that point, I was just paranoid enough to sort of like go, no, that was too, they just immediately went, oh, shut the laptop, and they just start the car up and they drove. And it just felt like they'd heard me say, I'm going to go out to you and I'm going to go and see these guys. And these guys weren't like the other guy, you know what I mean? These guys were interested in me or whatever, but they didn't look like they wanted to mess with you. You know, they sort of like they immediately just went, they'd gone. I don't know. It was just another thing that happened in those kind of 3 months, you know. It's just, well, there you go. I don't really know what else to say about it.
So they were just trying to find out exactly what you did see and then apply some intimidation in there. What about Ricky? Did Ricky have anything like this happen?
So that was another sort of kind of weird thing in a way about it. He said he didn't really. He said like he didn't really have like anything that he could think of that had made him think that he was under observation. So he just, he can't say that he did, because he kind of didn't, you know? So yeah, that was as far as he was concerned. He kind of like, it was behind him. And, you know, say we carried on going out all the time. We were still going out and sitting in fields and stuff, you know, even with more kind of reverence in a way, but he never reported anything weird like that.
He was driving the car.
It was me driving the car.
So it was your car?
It was my car, yeah.
That might be why then, because, you know, you did see a police officer, didn't you? A patrol car.
Yeah.
So
again, isn't that, you could go mental, couldn't you? Because you could think, oh, well, maybe those coppers actually knew exactly what was going on. So you just don't know, do you? You just don't know.
You don't know. But when you were in the field, now, the actual location, I might get you to draw a little map if you can, where all this, what has happened. I'm kind of thinking it happened between the barracks and Launton, in the fields between.
That's right. Is it? Yes, exactly where it was. Yeah. There's like farmers' fields, basically. If you're looking at the maps, you know, and you sort of have followed that ring road round anti-clockwise, then as you come round to the right-hand side, you'll just see a load of fields, or at least it used to be. I haven't been there for a long time, but it used to be just kind of farmers' fields, and then the next village along would be Launton, that would be in between those places, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm guessing that there is this big housing estate. So that was Wretchick Way. That would have been that ring road. That whole area on the left-hand side you wasn't built up. Was that field as well?
No, that's Langford Village.
Oh, so that okay. So that was there then. Okay.
That was there, but it wasn't. But it's been built up over the years. There wasn't as many houses as I think there is now. So it's kind of, I know over the last kind of 10 years, it has built up quite a bit around there. There's more industrial units and stuff than there used to be, but yeah, it was off to the right hand side.
Okay, yeah, because I can see two farms on there. One that would have been just off the ring road, and then there are several, quite a lot of fields, and then you have Launton just north of there.
If you were looking at the roundabout where the base is, there's two roundabouts going anti-clockwise from there, and it was basically just past the second roundabout, and then literally like, 20 yards ahead of that roundabout, that's where I parked, and then went off into the fields to the right of there.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I picked you up. Yeah, I've even got a little laneway, which I think you were talking about. Wonderful, yeah.
Okay.
And, okay, so you saw the light came down into the field. Did the 12 to 15 guys in the hazmats, were they coming away from the object or going towards the object?
Yeah, they were coming away, but they were in our field. So it was like we hadn't actually got into the field where the UFO was. We were walking towards the hedgerow that was in between us and the UFO, and they were on this side of the hedge. Now that again is a little bit strange, because like we went back there during the day, and it actually looks like I don't know how they would have got through the hedge. So yeah, the whole thing was a bit strange, to be fair.
Very strange indeed. And you said about the size of the object was about the size of your fist outstretched?
Yeah, and then looking at it, like obviously it was a distance away and through another hedgerow, but I could have easily believed if someone had said to me that was 30 foot in diameter, that would sound about right. But it was just a white light. You couldn't see any tails. You couldn't see a craft. It was a white, it was a star. You get what I'm saying, sort of thing. It was like looking at a star, but just a big one.
Gotcha.
Yeah, nothing other than that, really. So it's like, if you know, when you see like satellites go across the sky, and it's like, it kind of like, I assume if it was that height, it would have looked like one of them. It was just the fact that it was right down here that it looked like, the size of a bus or whatever. It was just like, but I'm sure if it was up right up high in the sky, it would have just looked like a satellite.
And the light itself, what colour was it?
It was just white. Like I say, exactly the same as a white star. It was like white light, and it was like, it wasn't blinding. You could look at it, but it was bright. You know, it was like I never really got an opportunity to just stare at it. Except the best view I got of it was kind of when it was just overtaking the car, when it was heading off towards the field as it was coming down. At that point, I did kind of like stare at it for a while as I was driving. But again, it was no difference from it when it was behind us than when it was in front of us. It looked like a star from behind, it looked like a star from the front or whatever, in the direction it was heading. It was sort of like there was just no details to it other than it just being a bright white light,
And there was no pulsating, no flashing of the light or anything like that. Just like a static light.
It was just a solid white light. There was no kind of there was no aircraft lights on it, or anything like that. And it didn't seem to dim or brighten. It stayed exactly the same all the time. Even when I'm assuming that some of it's a bit of assumption, but even when it was on the ground, it still was glowing. So it kind of gave the impression that it was exactly the same brightness, even when it was sitting on the ground, as when it was in the air.
And when it had come down to the field, was it illuminating the surroundings?
Yeah.
And you think it's possible that these individuals had come from this object?
Well, I can't say for certain. All I can say is that they were in this field when this thing came down and we went into that field, I didn't see them get out of that light. I didn't see them go back to it. They were just we were started walking towards the hedgerow where we were going to be able to see the light absolutely directly through the hedge. And as we ventured towards the middle of the field, they were coming from that hedgerow, walking toward, like, you know, kind of towards us, if you like, across the field. But I never actually saw them, like, get out of the craft. But like I said, like, as you can see, like, you know, they are typical farmers' fields and stuff. The only other option would be that those 12, 15 guys were already in that field and they knew that thing was coming down. That's the only other option that I can think of. But they had some connection to that white light. They weren't farmers and they weren't a crime investigation unit or anything like that. You know, I forgot to mention that when I talked to Ricky about what happened about the guy's face, exactly the same thing happened to Ricky as well. So Ricky had the exact same experience. The guy was nose to nose with him and told him to get out of the field. And he had the same dread and everything. So the guy did it to both of us simultaneously. They weren't farmers, you know.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if Ricky had the same thing happen, because you were both out of there pretty quickly. You hightailed it.
Yeah, I didn't realize. Sorry, I must have missed it at the time. But yeah, the reason why Ricky was pacing me wasn't because he was chasing me out of the field. He wasn't running because I was running. He was running because he had exactly the same experience.
See, that's an unusual one, isn't it? So how far, what kind of distance would you have said you and Ricky were away from these individuals?
At that point, I'd say, like, you know, 100 yards.
Okay, 100 yards.
Less than half a field away, you know. Like.
See, that's very strange, isn't it? You know, Ricky points, this guy turns around, stares straight at you two, and then you both see, like, a projection, would you have said? Like, maybe like a projection. You saw his face right in front of yours.
Yeah, it could have been, you know, I couldn't have told you the difference between it being a projection and him actually being there. But it was like he was, you know, my nose was like touching his visor. It was like that. And it wasn't, I didn't project forwards. It was like he was just stood there. And like I say, it could have been in my mind. It could have been physical. I couldn't have told you the difference. You know, like, it was somehow he managed to sort of like go boom, eye to eye with me, like he was in my face, you know. So I don't know. Yeah, it wasn't. It annoyed me because, like, well, I am really interested in the subject. And, like, I would like to have had a nicer experience. But, like, it wasn't the nicest experience. So, I said to you, I've had other experiences as well, some better ones. But this would have been nice if this actual kind of, like, in this absolute world, you know, normal sort of consciousness encounter, it would have been nice if it could have just been some nice guys with blonde hair saying hi. But it wasn't. It was kind of like fairly aggressive encounter.
Yeah, it's because you stumbled upon something going on.
Yeah.
And when this guy turned around, looked at you guys, you had his face in your face. You were overcome with fear.
Yeah. I've felt fear before, you know, like been nervous and stuff. And this was just, it was kind of like it was amplified. It definitely felt external. Like he made me feel like that. It was horrible. It was really horrible.
And I've heard of people having these feelings before, but these feelings tend to be projected by some kind of instrument or equipment of some sort. So,
right.
You know, but this guy was just able to do it just by looking at you two.
I mean, because they were wearing these suits, you know, like, I don't know whether maybe he had something on his suit that he was using, you know, he may well have put his hand up to something, but I didn't see it myself. But, like, all of my experience was that it felt like he was doing it from his mind, you know, that he was just sort of like bombing me, was in my face. And I got the telepathic as well, where he told, all I heard him, so the slight difference was that in my head, I heard, but it wasn't just the words, obviously, it was the feeling that made me turn and run. But Ricky heard, go away. And I questioned him about that. I said, is that what you heard? Because I heard him actually swear at me. And he said, no, he just said, go away. But he said it was really menacing. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Because I think then what it was is that it's not what he projected verbally. It was like our interpretation of something that was projected at us. And I think so Ricky obviously interpreted his telepathic, if you like, just the same meaning, but but different words, you know, whereas mine just felt more aggressive. So I don't think he actually swore at us or at me. I think it was just that's how my mind kind of like interpreted.
Interesting. And you said you went back to the site. Was that the next day or the following week?
No, we went. So we went back a couple of times. So let's tell you an interesting little side story. Okay, one of my friends, he was interested in what happened. We went back there, and when we went back there, this was about 3 weeks later. We saw another light, and it came, and then it just stopped, and then it went. And we was like, okay, cool. You know, that's nothing else interesting happened apart from this weird light. They say it did just come over very like strange and stop dead. And then we all sort of felt a bit spooked out, and then it just went back the way it came from. So, but my friend was taking photos, and in one of the photos, there's orange lights in the sky just behind our heads. And they definitely weren't there at the time that we took the photos. It's like it was just another one of those kind of just strange anomalies, or things that happen when you go out, you know, doing Star Watches and stuff. But there were three orange lights that were in the sky, and they're quite bright, but they weren't there when we stood there. They just came out on the photo, you know, like orbs or something. I don't know, but really prominent, you know, it's strange. But yeah, just one of those strange things, you know.
Need to really get a Geiger counter, pick up any traces of anything was picked up. Because, I mean, they were wearing hazmat suits.
That's what they looked like, yeah. I couldn't say for sure that that's exactly what they were, but that's what they looked like. You know, if you see, you know, a classic picture of guys in hazmat suits, that's what they looked like. They weren't particularly great fitting or anything. They were wearing them just like people wear hazmat suits, you know, where they're designed to fit all. You know, there's a big part of me that when people said, if someone said to me, oh, you know, were they aliens? I'm like, I can't tell you.
If they're wearing some kind of suit, it was there to protect themselves against something. I mean, it seems an unlikely place for them to be doing any kind of, you know, military testing or anything like that. You know, with the hazmats and the lights, you know, you can say it was some kind of military exercise or something. But that the guy turning around and you getting these weird vibes, and then all the stuff which happened after with the helicopters and the phone and all that, you know, that's kind of something which doesn't happen if it's just a military exercise of sorts. So, you know, you've definitely experienced something. You know, obviously we can't jump to conclusions and say it was aliens and all that, but something definitely did happen to you and Ricky that night.
Yeah, and I just don't know whether it was meant to come down. That's the sort of feeling I had, was it was like as if, like, you know, we'd stumbled into an accident or something. You know, like, I don't know, the whole thing just felt dangerous, and like as if it, like, they weren't meant to be there. We weren't meant to be there. no one was meant to be there. But there we were, you know, and it was just almost like a feeling of kind of, I don't know. I can't say, I can't vouch for how they felt or anything, but it was almost like a kind of, like, you know, a kind of embarrassing thing where everyone's like, oh, sorry, you saw this, you know, you shouldn't be here. Do you know what I mean? And I was going, oh, yeah, we're sorry we're here.
Could they just knocked on your door, say, here, listen, sorry about the other night, you know, you weren't supposed to see that. So, you know, if you're just, you're going to need to keep quiet. But did you hear anything about this? You know, was there anybody mentioning things that they'd seen or some weird activity in the field? Or was it just from the moment it happened, that was it? You didn't hear anything about it?
Yeah, no, not that I know of. You know, nothing came back our way. And, like, I'll be honest with you, I'm not really a local paper reader or anything. I didn't hear anything. No one, you know, just no one spoke to me about it, or wasn't really big on the internet or anything like that at the time. Like, I've never really been a particularly technically orientated person. I'm not really interested. So I've only had a smartphone for about, you know, 2 years. So just, I've kind of avoided it if I can, and I've avoided the internet as well, to be honest with you. So.
And to our listeners, you know, if anyone lives in the area around Oxford and you may have witnessed or heard about something happen, just like what Dave said, you know, let us know. In fact, maybe you were one of the people that were harassing Dave, following him, and you're no longer with that agency anymore, maybe. You know, get in contact. We'd like to know what your deal was there. Did you ever report it, Dave, at all?
Report it to, like, the police or anything?
Not so much the police. Someone like MUFON or, like, a UFO reporting centre?
Yeah, I spoke to Dave Hodrian. Do you know Dave Hodrian from Birmingham UFO Group?
I do indeed. Yeah, I'm a friend of him on Facebook.
Yeah. I spoke to him like a few times about different things, and that we sort of like kept in contact for a while. And he came to see my band play a few times, and I think he's in two of the music videos as well. Band, so you know, like we sort of became friends for a while. He's a good guy, but yeah, he knew all about it. He did a case thing on it, you know.
Oh, that's good. What I'll do is I'll link to that as well within the show notes. Good stuff. That was interesting, Dave. I'm not gonna lie.
Thanks, mate. Nice one. Well, keep up the good work, mate. And I've got your WhatsApp now, so I'll message you every now and then. See how you're doing.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, like I said, keep in contact. All right, Dave. I really appreciate you coming on, sharing that for our listeners.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, I'll see you soon.
No worries. Take care, Dave, all right? And I'll talk to you soon.
Bye, mate. Bye.
Bye for now.
That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to David for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.